Sunday, the 15th of June, Rabbi Malcolm Perlman, Lev Sachmoid in Halach and Hashkofa.
We may not get through all of this today. So our issues are Lev Sachmoid in Halach and Hashkofa, three case studies. You're looking to move house and finding one to your liking is difficult. The only one you have found is occupied, inconveniently, and not for sale. You approach residents, not from the price, 20% above the market value. Is there a problem of Lev Sachmoid, of coveting? So the house isn't for sale, you knock on their door and you offer them a good price. Have you transgressed Lev Sachmoid? Yes, there's a difference. You collect old Sforim. You've been looking for a long while for a first edition of the Shalach HaKadosh. A chaver shares your interest and one day proudly announces he has purchased one. You would love to own one yourself and lovingly admire his. Is there a problem of Lev Sachmoid? Third situation, which is based on a tshuva of the Mitzel HaChachma, Stern. In one particular year in a town in Eastern Europe, the Rav of the Shul was the only one who managed to obtain Shmura flour, it should say. His congregants came to him requesting him to share and what he has, keeping a minimum for himself. He agreed to share whatever he could. It was then suggested that they should enjoy their Shmura matzahs, they also transgressed their Sachmud. And the Shiva was then sent off on this issue. So the Sachmud based Riacha, it's very practical and very important as follows. Twice in the Torah we have the transgression of Lev Sachmoid, once in Pashas Yisro and once in Pashas Veskanam. In Yisro we find Lev Sachmoid Beit Reacha, Lev Sachmoid Eishes Reacha. You shall not covet the house of your associate or the wife of your associate. In Pashas Veskanam it says Lev Sachmoid Eishes Reacha, Lev Sachmoid Beit Reacha. Two separate instructions. One Lev Sachmoid and another expression Lev Sisaber. Lev Sachmoid Lev Sisaber. Also you'll note the order is different in Veskanam. We start with wife first and then house. In Shemos, it's house first and then wife. And Ramban notes that the proper way to do things is house first and then wife. But as he says, some of the Bochum uses this expression, do it differently, first and wife and then the house. Everything is covered in this transgression. But the question is Lo Sachmon and Lo Sisaber different transgressions, or are they the same? In Ve'ez Chanon, we find there are two different expressions. Lo Sachmon, you shall not covet. Lo Sisaber, from the Taiva, you shall not desire. Are they the same or are they different? In fact, the Malbim learns that the nuance is in terms of Hashkofa. He says, Lo Sachmoid only applies to something that you can see. You can see. Lo Sisaber can apply to something that you cannot see. So he says, you can't desire somebody else's wife unless you've seen her, Pashtus. But you can have Lo Sisaber, you can desire somebody else's house just by knowing that they have a bigger house, they have more space, you'd love a big house and more space. So he suggests the difference is, can you see, can you not see? And again, both are covered. Lo Sachmoid is what you can see. Lo Sisaber includes even that which you cannot see. In fact, the Malamad Lahail learns as follows. He says it depends what triggers the desire. Is the desire triggered by the item or triggered by your deficiency? Is it triggered by the item or triggered by your deficiency? Lev Sachmoid is triggered by the item, Lev Sisaber by your deficiency. Right? In other words, you feel that you would like a car, you see somebody else has a car, oh, I'd love his car. But the starting point for it was triggered by your deficiency. As opposed to being triggered by the item, it's not based on your deficiency, you see his item and you desire his item. In fact, as we shall see, the Rambam learns the difference between these two is a halachic difference. There's a halachic difference between these two based on the Mechilta. But let's first of all have a look at a couple of references in the Gemara to Lo Sachmoid. The first is the Gemara in Bava Metzia. We know the halacha is that a shomer chinam, a volunteer guardian, is not liable for Gneiva Avaveda. His liabilities are quite limited. If the item is stolen, or if the item is lost, he's not liable. He's really only liable if he was negligent in the guardianship. But beyond that, he's not liable. So I give an item to Reuven to look after, and I come back and he claims it was stolen. So, it was stolen, he's not liable, he was a volunteer guardian. On the other hand, we have to ensure that he was not negligent. Because if he was negligent, even if it was subsequently stolen, then he will remain liable. So if he leaves the window open, and then the item is stolen, he remains liable, even though the ultimate result was a theft. So the halacha is he has to come to Beis Din and make a shavua, take a shavua, take an oath, shlo posha bo yad. So he wasn't negligent in the item. What happens if he doesn't want to take an oath? He's nervous. Taking an oath is a big thing, to come to Beis Din and take an oath. He's nervous about taking an oath. So in fact, he can pay instead. Shnei v'lo rotz lo shavua. He can take and pay. He says, listen, I don't want to take an oath. The item was stolen. You have to take it. I wasn't negligent with it. I don't want to take an oath to Beis Din. I'm nervous about taking an oath. I'll pay you instead. So in fact, he can do that. However, Rav Huna came along and said as follows. This is Gemara in Bava Metzia, number Daman on base, in source number 4. Avonah came along and said, one second. Maybe, in fact, he likes the item. And he's using this technique to keep the item for himself. He's using this technique to keep the item for himself. But in reality, he's got his item in his back cupboard or in his back room. but and I come out and claim the item. He says it was stolen and I don't want to take an oath, and he pays instead. The reality is, in fact, he's kept it. So it says Rav Huna, we need to make him take a shavua, another type of oath, she'enu b'shusa, a shavua she'enu b'shusa. You have to come to Beis Din and say, look, the item was stolen, and I don't want to take the shavua of Leshlo possible, yeah, but not a shavua she'enu b'shusa is not his rishus, and that's just something we have to insist that he does. The Gemara then asked the following question. There's a Gemara back on Bapema Beis in Bab Matir. Gemara asked the following question: we have a what's the purpose of encouraging, of demanding that someone takes a shavua? The purpose is in the hope that if he's done something which is a little bit improper, he won't take a shavuah about it. He'll have enough yirah shamayim, enough fear of Hashem, that he won't take an oath and based into that. And therefore a shavuah will basically trigger, either he'll take a shavuah and we'll believe on the basis of shavuah, or he'll be so nervous of taking a shavuah, he'll say, you know what, I remember where it is. So the shavuah is a deterrent or an encouragement to unearth the truth. But the principle of shavuah is based on our belief in his ultimate integrity. That's what it's based on. That basically this guy will take a shavuah and will treat a shavuah seriously, and therefore to believe based on his integrity. So there are certain exceptions. Certain people we don't allow to take a shavuah. For example, Chashan Mamona. Someone that we suspect is a dishonest person. There's no point bringing him to base him to take a shavuah. He's dishonest. He's dishonest about this, he's dishonest about other things as well. Also, if a person has demonstrated a disdain, an absolute disdain for Lav and the Torah, he has demonstrated a disdain for the prohibitions and the Torah. Well, again, no point bringing him to Beis Din to take a shavuah. He's demonstrated a disdain for other halachas. He'll demonstrate a disdain for taking a shavuah as well. He'll take a shavuah even though he's right. So certain categories of people that the shavuah is no point to ask him to take a shavuah. So Rav Huna and Agem comes along and says, this man can take a shavuah she'enu b'shusa. He can take a shavuah she'enu b'shusa. So you might ask the following question. One second. Why are we asking him to take a shavuah? Because we're worried in case he's kept the item for himself. But if he's kept the item for himself, essentially, we're worried he's transgressed those tachmot. He's transgressed his prohibition of not coveting. That's what we're worried about. So this is a man, we're going to bring him to Beis Din, we're worried he's demonstrated a disdain for those tachmot. If he's demonstrated a disdain for those tachmot, there's no point in bringing him to take a shavuah. So the Gemara says, how does Rav Huna's shavuah work at all? It doesn't work at all. How can we ask a man like this to take a shavuah if we're worried he demonstrates a disdain for those tachmot? So the Gemara answers as follows. Lo tachmot le'inshi below domi mashmalehu. The only reason why we don't let him take a shavuah is because we're worried that this is not a man of integrity. And that just as he's flouted one issa according to the Torah, he'll flout other issa as well. But in fact, and the translation is very important in the Gemara, the popular view of lo sachmod is that you only transgress lo sachmod where you do not pay. But if you pay, then there's no transgression of lo sachmod. That's the popular view of lo sachmod. The popular view of lo sachmod, the word on the streets in common parlance about lo sachmod is you only transgress lo sachmod when you don't pay. Therefore, this man has paid for the item. He's a volunteer guardian. He says, I want to pay instead of taking shavuot. So he's paid. So in his own mind, he has not transgressed those tachmot. In other words, this is not a person that demonstrates a flagrant disdain for halacha, demonstrates his willingness to flout halacha. He hasn't, because he is part of the popular view that you don't transgress those tachmot where you pay. So he's done something a little improper, he's kept the item for himself, he sees this basically as a commercial transaction, I've got the item, I paid for the item, I haven't done anything particularly wrong, but come to the basin and take a shavuah, there's none in my rishus, that he won't do, because he's a man who's God-fearing, he's a man who has integrity. So that's the Gemara's response. Therefore, now, the question to ask is, but what is the halacha about this tachmud? The Gemara's language is that the popular view of this tachmud is that you don't transgress where you pay. And what does the Gemara mean by that? Well, does that mean that's the popular view and the halacha? Or does that mean that's a popular view, but that's not the halacha? That's not the halacha. In fact, the language of the Gemara, you would argue, implies that's a popular view, but that's not the halacha. Otherwise, the Gemara would have said, no, he hasn't transgressed the tachmud. Because the halacha of the tachmud is you only transgress where you pay, where you don't pay. So the language of the Gemara implies that's the popular view, but not the halacha. So if we were to stop there, I think one would say, as the Mefarshim do, that you transgress the tachmud even if you do pay. Even if you do pay, and although the popular view is you only transgress where you don't pay, in fact the halacha is you transgress where you do pay. That's how you would leave that Gemara concluding. Until you get to the Gemara in Sanhedrin. Gemara in Sanhedrin, Achafeya on the base, has a similar sort of situation. There the issue is not about the integrity of a person that's taking a shavuah, but the integrity of a potential aid. The integrity of a potential witness in basing. Again, we know there are certain categories of people that are disqualified, professionally disqualified from being an aid in Beis Din. So, for example, a professional gambler is disqualified from being an Aden Basin. Obviously, a thief is disqualified from being an Aden Basin. The Gemara asks the following question. What about a Chamsin? Someone who... What? A Chamsin is someone who is coerces you to sell. A forced sale. A Chamsin is coerces you to sell. Right? It coerces you to sell. So, the Gemara says, is it... But he does pay. It's a coerced sale. Right? Now, he does pay. Is he disqualified from being an Aden Basin? We know this guy is a Chamsin. He's a Chamsin. He forces people to sell items they're not ready to sell. What about that? So, the Gemara says, in fact, Minah Torah, we allow this guy to take to be an Aden Basin. We allow him to be an Aden Basin. A Chamsin can be an Aden Basin. Later on, rabbinically, it was prohibited, and we said, no, a Chamsin cannot be an Aden Basin. But Minah Torah, a Chamsin can be an Aden Basin. Now, and that's what the Gemara says. Tosfos asks, one second, we're allowing a Chamsin to be an Aden Basin, but hasn't he transgressed the Sachmod? A Chamsin, this item was not for sale. He forced the sale. He coveted this item. Has he not transgressed the Sachmod? And again, just as we don't allow someone to take an oath if they've demonstrated a disdain for Lav and the Torah, we will not allow them to be an aid if they've demonstrated disdain. So it says, oh, how can the Gemara say quite simply, according to the Torah, the man's a good aid. He's a great aid. Bring him into the basement. Let him take testimony. But, so it says, what about the Sachmod? What about the Sachmod? So Tosfos answers, remember it's a long way away from our first Gemara, Tosfos answers, no, you only transgress the Sachmod where you don't pay. This man pays, you don't transgress the Sachmod where you pay. Therefore the reason why in Minah Torah this man is a good aid is because you haven't transgressed the Lavna Torah. You haven't transgressed the Lavna Torah because you only transgress it somewhere where you don't pay. Where you pay, there's no transgression of the Sachmod. So we now have a steal between the two Gemaras. The first Gemara, the final lines was, the reason why this man can take a Shavua is because the popular view of the Sachmod is that you only transgress where you don't pay. The implication is that's the popular view, but the halacha is in fact you transgress where you do pay. And here as the Gemara says, the reason why this guy can be a good aid is because he hasn't transgressed the Sachmod because he's paid. So Tosfos gives two teruchim. One teruch is that in fact we misunderstood that first Gemara. We misunderstood, and the halacha is with the popular view. It's with the popular view. The popular view is you don't transgress where you pay, and that in fact is the halacha. And therefore over here the reason why the Chamsin can be a good aid is because he's in accordance with the halacha. He's paid at least for the item. He's paid for the item, therefore he hasn't transgressed the Sachmod. That's Tosfos' first teretz. From that you would emerge you don't transgress the Sachmod where you pay. His second teretz is, no, in fact both Gemaras are united in a different way. You do transgress the Sachmod even where you pay. Even where you pay, transgress the Sachmod. In which case, how can we rely this man to be an aid? Says Tosfos, because in this particular case we're talking about in the olden days of Chamsonim, they were more polite, they were more civil. Yes, they forced the sale, but then they basically also wouldn't leave until you acquiesced to the sale. Until you said, you know what, okay, you can have it, you want it so much, you can have it, Gesundheit, you can have it. Right, Sonny. So Tosfos, you don't transgress those Sachmod where the guy ultimately acquiesces. You don't transgress those Sachmod. So you transgress if you don't pay. You transgress if you do pay and he doesn't acquiesce. But you don't transgress the Sachmod we ultimately acquiesce. So in the olden days, the Chamsonim they were more civil, they were gentlemanly Chamsonim, and therefore, yes, they would take the item, yes, they would pay for it, or they would pay for it and coerce the sale, but they wouldn't, basically, they would coerce an agreement, coerce an acquiescence. So now, as we leave this Gemara, we have one of three options. If I was to ask you now, if I'm allowed, which it doesn't, what's the halacha of Lo Sachmod? You'd be entitled to one of three views. You can either say, listen, Lo Sachmod is only when you don't pay. When you do pay, there's no Lo Sachmod. The first answer to it. Or you could say, listen, Lo Sachmod, sorry, one of two views. Lo Sachmod is even where you pay. Even where you pay. But there's no Lo Sachmod where you pay and he acquiesces. That's how you would emerge from this Gemara. There's no Lo Sachmod where you pay and he acquiesces. In fact, the smag paskins that you only transgress Lo Sachmod when you don't pay. As soon as you pay, there's no Lo Sachmod. No Lo Sachmod, as soon as you're involved in money, there's no Lo Sachmod anymore. It's basically a commercial transaction of some form or another. If we look at the Rambam, which is number 8. So the Rambam says quite clearly that you transgress Lo Sachmod. You only transgress the Sachmod if you're taking something that can be purchased. Condition of the Sachmod. If I admire somebody else's looks or their brains, I'm not transgressing the Sachmod at all because I can't purchase that. And you're very insistent, and almost you harass him, until you get it from him. Even if you pay a good price, 20% over the market value, whatever the price is, you pay domim merubim, you transgress lo sachmed. That's the Rambam's view. And the Rambam makes no qualifications about he does agree or he doesn't agree, or he does agree, he doesn't agree. So the understanding of the Rambam is that even if the guy agrees, he transgresses the sachmed, which is interesting. Even if he agrees, he transgresses the sachmed. How the Rambam then reconciles those two Gemaras is a separate story, not for now. But it's the one view we didn't expect to see, if you like, emerging from those Gemaras. And the Rivet, understandably, over here says, 1 second, you don't transgress the sachmed where he acquiesces. The Rivet also understands the Rambam that there's no qualification, there's no caveat. You transgress even if he acquiesces. Does the Rambam know? The Rambam should have said, yes, you transgress if you pay, but not if he acquiesces. So now we have three views. The Smag, you only transgress if you don't pay. The Rivad, you transgress if you do pay, but not if he acquiesces. And the Rambam, you transgress if you do pay, and even if he acquiesces. Those are the three views. In fact, the Rambam goes on to say, interestingly enough, that although you transgress the Sachmud, there's no malchus for the Sachmud. There's no corporal punishment for the Sachmud. Why? Because the Rambam says it's a lav she'ein bein ma'aseh. One of the exceptions to malchus is that if it's a lav for which there is no action involved, there's no malchus. So there's no malchus for Lashon Hara. Although it's a lav and toh, there's no malchus for it because there's no action involved.
Do you think you
might have thought that? So that is the Rambam's question. It's very interesting. The Rambam on the one hand says that you only transgress the Sachmud when you pay, and actually the Rambam also says, and you only transgress it once the transaction's gone through. The Rambam says you transgress the Sachmud when you pay, and you transgress it once the transaction's gone through, then you transgress the Sachmud.
Speaking
is not classified as an action. In halacha, it's not classified as an action. Zibor is not an action. Action is something you do with your hands. So the Rambam goes on to say, what's the definition of the Sachmud? The Sachmud is that you cover his item. The Sachmud is that you pressurize him to sell. You then, even if you give money, and then says Rambam, you transgress. When do you transgress? You transgress when the transaction takes place. Before the transaction takes place, the Rambam, you do not transgress the Sachmud. So it's rather interesting. The Rambam on the one hand says you transgress in the moment of action. On the other hand, the Rambam says you don't get malchus for the Sachmud because it's a transgression that does not involve an action. And the Rambam says over here, again, takes up the Rambam to task in this and says, 1 second, you can't have it both ways. If you only transgress at the moment of transaction, that is an action. So why isn't there then malchus? So the Magid Mishnah over here is very interesting. We now have two issues which divide the Rambam and the Rivet. One issue is, do you transgress when he acquiesces? The Rambam says yes. The Rivet says no. Do you transgress when he acquiesces? And the second issue is, do you get malchus for this or not? Why do you not get malchus for this? The Rambam says you don't get malchus because it doesn't involve an action. And the Rambam says that's not a reason for malchus. Over here it does involve an action. There are other reasons why you don't get malchus, but that's not the reason. In fact, the Magid Mishnah says it's in one debate. So think about it, according to Rambam, ultimately, when you review the whole process, there's only one thing sordid that's happened over here. And that is that you planned and schemed the whole thing. Because according to the Rambam, ultimately you have a willing buyer in some respect. Something the halakha would call, perhaps a reluctantly willing buyer, if that is an oxymoron. But basically the guy agrees in the end. He agrees. A willing seller, thank you. A willing vendor, thank you. A willing vendor, you have a willing seller in the end. Because ultimately, yes, you put down the money, you gave him a good price. But he acquiesced in the end. If we acquiesced in the end, when you survey the whole process, the only thing that was sordid, if you like, over here, was the fact that you schemed it. The fact that you planned this whole thing. Your kavanas rather than your action. So because the Rambam says that you even transgress the Sachmud when he agrees, that dilutes the moment of action. That if you like, gives a hefsha to the moment of action. And therefore it's clear that Rambam doesn't mean that the transgression is at the moment of action. The transgression is your planning. Transgression is your kavana. If you like, conditional on it being followed through. But the action is your kavana. If you like, the transgression, I should say. Transgression is your kavana. Transgression is your intention, your motivation, your planning. Conditional on it actually happening, that's true. But the action is a condition of your transgression. It isn't the transgression itself. And that is consistent with what Rambam says, because ultimately, even if he agrees, even if ultimately that becomes a sale, although a slightly unusual sale, but it's a sale, you look back at it, it's a commercial sale, it's a commercial transaction. What's wrong with a commercial transaction? What was wrong was you're not allowed to plan a commercial transaction of this nature. But the problem is your kavana, not your action. Whereas the Raiva, he says, no, there's no transgression of the Tachma where he agrees. Where he agrees, there's no transgression of the Tachma at all. So according to the Rambam, according to the Raiva, there's always something wrong with the action. Either you haven't paid, or even if you have paid, it doesn't mean you want to sell. You never actually agrees to the sale. Therefore, the Raiva says, how can you call this a lav she'ein bo ma'aser? There's an action involved. There's something sorted about the action. According to the Rambam, there's nothing sorted about the action. Let's have a look very briefly at some of the what's discussed in some of the brief resume. This halacha v'lona ma'aser. But some of the issues that are brought in the other poskim. First of all, what's interesting to note is that it seems you can't transgress lo sachmos. It seems where the item was already on sale. So, for example, if an item is on sale and you bargain down the seller. So it's on sale for £100, you get it for £70. And the truth is, you never really wanted to sell it for £70. Maybe you've transgressed the Tachmud. It seems that you can't. That's not the case. The Tachmud is where you are the one that triggers, you're the one that forces him to part with it. If he's volunteered to part with it, just none of the price that you want, that's not the Tachmud. That's not the Tachmud, that's called business, I believe. So that's not the Tachmud. Now, the other interesting thing is that you don't transgress those Tachmuds when you want an item the same as his. You only transgress those Tachmud when you want to take his item from him. Now it's interesting, we haven't come to a halakhic definition between those Tachmud and those Tachmud. The Rambam says both of these, the difference is not just, if you like, in Drush, but in halakha as well.
I thought because the low Tachmud is and the Tachmud Ashes, because Ashes is different, I presume the other one is the same, that it would be different.
So again,
the connection of one to the other,
yeah.
The Ashes has to be different. I presume the other would also be different.
Well, it could be, but in don't forget in Shemot it says Lotachmon Beis Reacha, Lotachmon Eishes Reacha. In Lotachmon it says Lotachmon Beis Reacha. So some learn it's actually the same. But the Rambam learns that there are two separate transgressions over here. Lotis Ave, the language of the Rambam is very important over here, as always. Look at the number 8 again. Lotis Ave, Kolamis Ave, Beiso, O Ishto, the Kelem Shalchabena. If you desire it, the whole kiyotz be meshad devarim she'ef shalik knows in a minute. Kibben shechasha belibel ha'eich yikne davaze. Says Rambam, losis ava is an earlier transgression from losis ava. A very interesting definition, based on the mechilta. You transgress losis ava when you desire something and you start planning in your mind how to get it. You immediately transgress losis ava. If you then translate your plans into action, you will let him transgress Lo Tisava and Lo Tachmud. So they're both transgressions about thought processes. The first is stage one of thought. The second seems to be a more intensive form of thought which leads to action, and then at the moment of action, that triggers transgression for the second thought, Lo Tachmud, or the more intensive thought, Lo Tachmud. But the Rambam says they're two separate prohibitions. They're not one and the same, based on the Mechilta. Others take issue with the Rambam, and that is, by the way, has borne Shulchan Aruch as well. What's very interesting to note about Lo Tisava, which I don't know if it's so well known, is the Rambam defines that even Lo Tisava, you don't transgress simply by drooling over somebody else's item. It's only when you have stopped planning in your mind, if I could offer some money for that, maybe I can maneuver things, etc., etc. You don't transgress it for that. You only transgress it, until you stop planning. Until you stop planning, says the Rambam, kiven shechasha belibo ha'eich yikne davaze. Once you start thinking in your mind to acquire it, then you transgress Lo Tisava. Once you then go on to acquire it, then you transgress Lo Tachma. If you steal it, you transgress all three. You get a multi-pack of transgressions, Lo Tisava, Lo Tachma, and Lo Tigzal. Because you've done all three processes. You've desired in your mind, you've started planning, then translate those plans into action. That's Lo Tisava, Lo Tachma, and Lo Tigzal. You then steal it, you've had it. Of course, acquiring can be any form of acquiring. It doesn't have to be sale. It can be any form of acquiring that you can do. One of the Lose Kenim and Shachar has asked about Lose Tisava, Lose Tachma, Eishas Reacha. How do you plan about that? He says, if you're trying to orchestrate, or think about orchestrating, God forbid, a divorce between a couple, so that you can marry the spouse, you transgress Lose Tisava. Translate into action, transgress Lose Tachma.
So, what happens, for example, if you're an antique dealer, maybe there's an antique for somebody's house, and the gentleman has no desire to sell it.
Right.
He said to him, frequently, if you ever desire want to sell that,
right,
I'll offer you a very good price.
Right. So, see, I'm not about halacha, and this is more theoretical, but it seems my understanding of halacha is very clear, and there's a tshuva of the Matel HaChochma, 20th century Posek. He says, there's no question about it, you can ask somebody if they want to sell an item. Remember, the Rambam's notion is, his tzibur, that you pressurize him, or you harass him in some respect. It seems very, very clear. You can ask a person who wants to sell something, and you can ask them at least a couple of times. I don't know, my assumption would be that what is considered to be unreasonable would probably be based partly on what standard market situations, basically. What's reasonable, what's not unreasonable. But these shallows have to be asked. But there's no question you can knock on somebody's door and say, is your house for sale? Or would you like to sell your house? You haven't harassed them, you haven't pressurized them, you've given them an opportunity. If you start doing it every single day and texting them every half an hour and putting them under enormous pressure, and you're on the government, sure, you might give them a leer until they put that for sale sign over their house, that would definitely be no sasaba and no sasaba, etc. Thank you for that. Now, by the way, lo sasaba is only something you can acquire, only something you can buy. The only transgressor sasaba is something you can buy. I hope it doesn't apply to situations in schools.
You can't buy another wife.
No, I don't mean buy, I'm sorry, procure. Procure. That means through some means of some form or another. For example, if you desire somebody's looks or brains, you can't acquire that.
Yes.
You can't acquire that. Sorry, thank you. Procure in some respect. Okay, the other interesting thing is, so if we come back to our first, our three scenarios, the first one, it seems clear, is not, you don't transgress lo sasaba or lo sasaba, because you're making an offer on the house, and as long as you don't think in your mind, you transgress lo sasaba, if you thought in your mind, I'm going to offer them this, and if they don't agree to me, I'm going to pressurize it. Then you transgress lo sasaba. But the fact you like their house, knock on their door and offer them the price, it seems to me that you don't transgress lo sasaba. Or lo sasaba. If you start pressurizing, you would. The second situation, it seems that there's no transgression either, because you haven't planned how to get it at all. There's no plan how to get it. Maybe other things you might have transgressed, or certainly kinna of some sort, and I may not be a positive midder, but you haven't transgressed the technicalities lo sasaba, lo sasaba. The last case is very interesting in Shubha. And again from Saddle Stern, and he says as follows. This is a real life case, and he brings four different reasons why the community have not transgressed lo sasaba or lo sasaba at all. One of the reasons he brings is they haven't pressurized the rob at all. They'd asked the rob, they had a situation, they shared it with him, they'd asked the rob, they had a situation, what can they do? So he agreed to give it to them. So, and it seems there was no pressure involved at all, quite straightforward. But another very interesting reason as well. Remember, the transgressions are where you take something from them or plan to take something from them that really is theirs, and they have no reason to part with it or no obligation to part with it. Here he says, if I've got enough shmurimats for myself and more, and you haven't got, I've got a chiv I've got a chiv of a chai for you. I've got to try and ensure you also fulfill your mitzvah d'oraisa. So therefore I have an obligation to part with my spare. I have an obligation, whether I like it or not, I have an obligation to part with my spare. So it's not the designs or the desires of the congregation that have encouraged him to part with it. He has a chiv to part with some of it so that others can share in the mitzvah, others can fulfill the mitzvah. Therefore, for another reason as well, he says that even if he didn't want to part with it, they wouldn't transgress lo sasaba or lo sasaba in their entreaties to him that he should part with it. So let's just finish with of course the very, very well known Ibn Ezra on lo sasaba, why lo sasaba is the climax for the Sefer Dibros. How can we fulfill a mitzvah that's happening? It seems like a very demanding mitzvah. I shouldn't covet what somebody else wants. It's kind of a natural human desire. Very beautiful lashon of the chinuch says, libo in masa biyada. A person's heart should be in their hands. One ought to have enough thought control to be able to realize what is mine, what is not mine. Ibn Ezra gives what is quite a well-known mashal of the villager and the princess. The villager and the princess is you have a primitive villager. No primitive villager would have designs on proposing to the princess. Maybe today's princesses might be different. But no primitive villager will have designs on the princess. It's just out of his domain, another world, completely other arena. He knows this is his will and that's his will. Says the Ibn Ezra that if we really understand Hashgacha process, basically, if we understand Hashgacha process, we know that of course we can have ambition, of course we can petition to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. But if it doesn't come my way, it means it's not part of what Hashem wanted for my neshama's journey. It's not supposed to be mine. It's not supposed to be mine. And therefore it becomes a reinforcement of Hashgacha Pratis. If I understand I have an individualized relationship with the Kodesh Baruch Hu, and the Kodesh Baruch Hu gives me what I need for my neshama to grow, for myself to move forward, then I don't desire what cannot be mine, because I understand it's not mine for good reason, and it wouldn't even be good for it to be mine. Therefore, it seems to me that that's a magnificent climax of Sefer Dibros, because the whole Maimed HaSinai was that Klal Yisrael had cemented a personalized relationship with the Kodesh Baruch Hu, and Hashgacha Pratis reinforced. Then the Sachmed is the climax of that, not only in Halacha, but in Hashgacha as well.